Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus. The word temenos means sacred space in Greek. It denotes a place that is more than a mere physical location, an area of interest that is special and set apart. Our Olympian temenos is dedicated to discovering and interacting with the many phenomenal manifestations of our living mythology and its local parallels in our surrounding culture. Our ongoing mission is to explore, honor, and celebrate the mythical world around us with a special focus on myth-based subcultures, ancient practices and beliefs, folklore entities, fabulous beasts, haunted places, celestial chariots, otherworld encounters, magical and mystical personalities, unique establishments, and even living labyrinths. Which brings us to tonight on Living Labyrinths with Athena Dugan. She will be speaking with Barry Gibby, and they're going to be exploring labyrinth odysseys, pilgrimages with trees. Greetings and welcome, Athena. How are you?
Greetings. Hi, how are you, Hercules?
I'm doing awesome, and I'm looking forward to hearing what you and Barry will be discussing. It sounds fascinating.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Barry has a great subject, some great labyrinth energy that she'll be talking about. Yeah, you'll enjoy it. So will our listeners.
So I'll be here if you need me.
Okay, great. Okay, so hi, Barry. How are you?
Hi, Athena. Great, thank you. How are you?
Good. I'm glad that you could be here tonight. Thank you so much. And I'm going to tell everybody a little bit about you, so then we can just get on. And we got so much meat to eat tonight. So, yeah, happy Valentine's Day to everybody out there as well. So,
and to you.
Thank you. So, Barry Carter Gibby, she's a longtime educator, a writer, and avid traveler. Barry interweaves her background in design, music, theater production, and ritual making to facilitate labyrinth workshops across the nation on a variety of themes. Her many pilgrimages to the 13th century Chartres Cathedral Labyrinth and others in Europe have guided her passion for the layers of symbology, cultural understanding, and synchronicities in her labyrinth work. She's built several labyrinths, a favorite one, a new shoe drive effort for city children, which developed into a 60-foot shoe labyrinth on the university grounds. Wow. Recently, Barry is particularly fascinated with the similarities of Celtic and Native American spirituality and has launched several workshops and presentations entitled Walking Like Trees, Honoring Parallels of Natural Life Phases and the Celtic Tree Zodiac. As an advanced certified facilitator and on the faculty of Hereditas.com, Barry finds sacred spaces everywhere. Welcome.
Thank you, Athena. This is great to be here. I'm so honored that you asked me to share something about labyrinths and my work, and this seems like a really interesting vehicle for a lot of different topics that are part of this Olympus group. So thank you. I'm really flattered. This is great to have a little time to talk about this and to enter into this realm of Temenos, which is the sacred space that we were hearing about in the introduction. And it's interesting to have labyrinths a part of this, which is certainly a vehicle for establishing a sacred space of some kind where symbol of the pilgrimage can occur.
Absolutely. Yeah. The labyrinth, it's like existence for so long. It's like, it's amazing. Like when, you know, we find them, when we find people, enthusiasts and, you know, and people that connect with it and understand what it's all about, it just makes life that much more interesting too.
Well, it is a, you know, it is a vehicle for connecting. And as you know, being a part of the Veritas group and as also part of the TLS, the Labyrinth Society, you are aware of there being now, you know, because of Lauren Archer's effort and others who are either trained or are just labyrinth lovers, there are now, you know, within the last maybe 30 years, about 6,000 labyrinths worldwide because of the new awareness, often of which comes about because of some, you know, cultural or worldwide anxiety and a need to find a deeper method of gaining, you know, a new sense of strength and consciousness around a, you know, a universal spirit of peace and balance and harmony. All of that enters into this world of walking the labyrinth or just being part of the labyrinth culture. So I love that you mentioned that because it's really been a huge, huge effort in not so long ago. Although historically, of course, as you very well know, historically, labyrinths go back, you know, as much as almost 5,000 years, and they're found, you know, all over the world in all kinds of unusual places, Roman baths or carved in walls, or I think Pompeii even has a wall, a small part of a wall near a temple where it's thought that somebody would use their finger to draw a labyrinth or to follow a labyrinth that's carved in the wall in order to be contemplative in their entry into the temple to be at peace mm-hmm. with themselves and to not come in with, you know, the same energy that they had from out on the street and in the busyness of their lives as, you know, as we are today. So labyrinth means all of that still today. It's yeah. always been a part of some kind of a symbology of pilgrimage and journey, say a life journey, and all of the turns and the twists that occurs in the smaller space, but the larger consciousness of the experience of labyrinth work.
Yes. So let me ask you something. With everyone with these issues to stay at home and, you know, many people are more homebound or just walking on the land, do you think they feel the energy of the earth and possibly the energy of the labyrinth trying to be reborn? I mean, that I don't know, maybe it's just like a fantasy that I have because I love walking in the earth and just get a feeling of the energy seeping through the soles of my feet. So I'm sort of wondering, like, what do you think? You think, I mean, I don't know, just a thought might be way out there, you know, how people might connect with the energy of the labyrinth, either by visually seeing it and it becomes like almost like a psychic cue or just something like, you know, I know when I first saw a labyrinth, it was like almost like a flash of like a future to be, you know, and then it just escalated from there.
You know, a lot of layers in that answer, but thank you for asking that. I can only speak really personally. My intuition about your question regarding the pandemic time and how people may view the use of the labyrinth at this time. I do know, as you're aware, that there are weekly, I think the term now is handheld labyrinth walks that are sponsored by Veritas.org. So if somebody's interested in that, they can certainly sign up on the website. They are free, but you do have to sign up and register. And Veritas is Veriditas.org. And that is the organization based in San Francisco, which was really started as the Worldwide Labyrinth Project from the initiative by Lauren Artress, Reverend Dr. Lauren Artress, who was inspired by her work at Grace Cathedral and then went to Chartres, and making a long story very short, went to Chartres to uncover the labyrinth there and uncover it from the chairs that were always covering it. And Chartres Cathedral is in France, in Chartres, France. It's about an hour southwest of Paris. And then I think that established a relationship with the hierarchy in the Catholic Church there in the Chartres area, which began a lovely relationship with labyrinths in general. And that became a catalyst for Lauren to establish a labyrinth at Grace Cathedral in San Francisco. So those of you out there that have been a part of that, either awareness of it or are there and can walk it, there are now two there at the cathedral. One is inside, one is outside. And the story behind that is just phenomenal. Lauren arrived to do pastoral work with the AIDS epidemic issue that existed in San Francisco in the late 80s, early 90s. And in her exhaustion from trying to reach everybody in that whole several layers of people involved with teams of caretakers and partners and friends and nurses and family, she just struggled with trying to find a vehicle to harmonize the group and to give them a supportive, nurturing experience. And she discovered that in walking the labyrinth at one of Jean Houston's retreat center offerings, that that really was a spark for her to start some sort of an effort in learning about and in offering the labyrinth as a place to come to build community and to walk together. And so that's the simple form of a deeper story. But you know, I really credit Lauren with being the mother hen of this new resurgence of labyrinth work, first in San Francisco, and then it quickly spread throughout the country and Canada and then around the world. And she established, it's kind of amazing. So now I think in its current iteration, because of the pandemic, I had a workshop built around this last June. It was going to be a weekend for women in Eastern Pennsylvania and a retreat, Kirkridge Retreat Center. Actually, I think it's called Kirkridge Retreat and Study Center in Bangor, Pennsylvania. And it got canceled because of COVID. And I thought, oh my gosh, Justine is there. So why don't you consider doing a virtual presentation. I thought, oh my gosh, I can't do that. This is all experiential. We're all outside. We were going to hang rice paper poetry on the, you know, clothesline around the labyrinth that's outside. And we were going to relate to the trees and the woods that are there. How can you do this virtually? So I kind of swallowed my pride and ended up readapting, and it has become, you know, actually a rather successful experience and experiment on some levels.
And that's why you're here. That was an amazing workshop, and thank you for the invitation, because I was like extremely excited to be a part of that, and like, oh my gosh, you're working with the Celtic zodiac, the Celtic spirituality, and you're keeping it within the labyrinth and within the earth. And it's like, yes, I can do this virtually as well. It was awesome. Why don't you tell us more about that, though, because it's such a for me, it was an intense experience, and at first, I will tell you, I was a little concerned. I'm like, how can I make that connection? You led it all the way, and it was well worth it.
Well, thank you. Well, I'm doing actually a longer version of that on March 20th through Veriditas.org as one of their faculty, and it's Walking Like Trees is the title, and you can go on the website at Veriditas and register for that. It's considered a qualifying workshop, which is the Veriditas term for kind of a pre-facilitator training class
right.
that one must do in order to take the facilitator training, which you do not have to do immediately afterward. There is a facilitator training afterwards. That starts on that Monday, and it's every morning for that following week. But you can do it anytime. I think within a year. I think you have a whole year that after the qualifying workshop you can do that. But anybody can take the qualifying workshop, and just either out of curiosity or out of their love for labyrinth and how it relates to our lives, or whatever reason. Somebody attended one of my workshops with that title, The Walking Like Trees, and said, you know, I came into it because I wanted to learn about I wanted to learn about the Celtic tree zodiac and the whole Celtic link to, you know, to what you were talking about with trees. She said, I ended up going away thinking, I learned about labyrinth. I'm going to get busy learning about labyrinth. So I loved hearing that. It was just so interesting. And I think this pandemic year has really forced people, probably the wrong word, but inspired people, let's use that, inspired people to go a little deeper in their lives and to find a certain new truth about who they are. They've had, you know, people have had time to do that, and or they've been kind of in their own personal situation, maybe forced to do that. What's important? What can I totally live without? How can I manage with, you know, all of these different ways of trying to relate to a normal life? And I think normal meaning what was pre-pandemic is probably never going to happen again. We are always going to be aware that there is some germ, you know, form of something out there that we need to be aware of, and that coming together as people means we are all in breathing distance with each other. So,
yeah.
You know, it's a new and scary kind of reality. So thank God for electricity and the internet and a way to relate to all of these wonderful, I mean, I've taken several classes that I never would have taken if I had to travel and be somewhere for an extended amount of time, or rent a place and rent a car. I mean, who knows? And to really focus on this subject. So I've taken several that have been fantastic classes that I think this is the new way, in combination with the live in-person gatherings as well.
Exactly. I agree. It's like, yeah, I've never taken so many classes, and I think it's great though, because you get to see people online that you wouldn't be able to see unless they, you know, traveled, and we don't have that opportunity right now, you know. So yeah, so that's been really great, and especially with Veriditas, they're offering a lot of classes. Some are free, and some you have to pay a small fee for, and it's all labyrinth based, and I absolutely love that. Yeah, so
I do too. Yeah. So my, you know, I've always in my teaching, and teaching is a huge part of my own background. That was my field, was education in English, and then graduate work in theater, and so teaching has always been something I've enjoyed. And you know, I think once you have that basic skill, as long as you are loving what you are learning, you can teach it. And so I at this point in my life, I just love being able to do that. So the tree focus came about because I began to integrate my work with the labyrinth with the elements. And I started out with rivers and the theme of water and relating our life cycles with the cycles of water, starting with the gurgling spring of the new source of water, to the youthful rapids and on down to the wisdom of the elder and feeding the river, the end of the river into the ocean, into the sea. So I started out with that image and did maybe a year of working with what I called river paths, P-A-T-H-S. So river paths was a focus for a while. And it was also my stab at wanting to preach a little about the, you know, the environmental elements of polluted water and our whole unawareness of what we do on a daily basis that infiltrates the spinoff of our habits into polluting the a life source for our daily lives. So that was one of the things that I was doing for a while. And then I got intrigued with trees and the fascination with the under the sous-terre, under the ground community of the tree life and the mycelium that seek out other ends of the root systems and this whole building of community underground. And how there is such a metaphor for all of that and how that relates to, you know, who we are as beings and how totally related we are in that. And then, you know, in reading further and realizing that trees not only are, you know, probably the most ancient, one of the most ancient living things on Earth, they are, they live, their lifespan is so much longer than ours that we don't have a concept of their liveliness within our own lifespan, because we time our lives around things around us that have a similar life. I mean, we even have flowers that are annuals, you know, that only grow for a certain amount of time once a year, that we have to either grow from seed or we buy them at the local whatever nursery to have for a certain number of months, and then they're gone, and then we start over the next year. So our lives are really, as human beings, are focused on our own life cycle, which is a very human-centered way of looking at the world, which is really warped. And so, you know, I began to realize that, you know, trees are just on a very surface level. They're so symbolic, and they're so part of who we are, just as an image of strength and protection and source. I mean, you look around your house, how many things do you have that are made of wood, whether it's in the structure of your house or whether it's furniture, if it's the flooring or you know, your piano case or your guitar or whatever. It's you know, we live with wood products.
Yes.
You know, all the
and
time.
The comfort and shading they give us too, and the heat. We go up under their, you know, the bushes. They keep us nice and cool. I love that.
They do, and they protect. You know, they do. They protect us, and they really are the lungs of the earth. And we're devastating our chance of extended existence the more we destroy this. So all of that interconnectedness really came to fruition with an opportunity to share that theme last spring in this workshop that I was going to do. Is actually just for women for a weekend retreat, which didn't happen. But you know, because I had everything kind of well prepared, I just ended up with several opportunities to sort of share that afterwards. And the gist of it is that we would come together share information. I would share information about the trees in general, the intelligence that they have, the many sensitivities that they have that are beyond the five or six senses that we think of. Dealing with warning each other about an impending insect or animal or some devastation of some kind, a storm. They all have some sensory way of a language that warns each other about impending danger, which I just found fascinating. But, you know, of course, also knowing that they really are the lungs of the earth, and they, I mean, the pine trees are clean the air in the morning when the dew is settling into the pine needle sections. And they clean the air that goes through the needles. And then as the sun comes out, it sort of dries up. But it happens every morning. So so they are, you know, cleansing tools in nature as well.
Yeah.
And, you know,
yeah,
so this is
very
what really fascinated me. And I thought, well, the phases of the tree and the phases of our lives could very much be a part of the whole, you know, trees could really be an archetype for life phases, and we could establish that in our own contemplative life to discover a deeper place in ourselves that can be applied to, a permanent or a growing, let's say, a progressive way of reaching a new depth of contemplation and a new depth of discovery for our own, you know, deeper self. And in so doing that, establish the phases of the trees and the phases of our own lives as part of walking the labyrinth, as the contemplative experience and embodied spiritual experience. And choosing a labyrinth that has four quadrants, like the Chartres labyrinth, which does have 11 circuits, or even just a smaller one with 7 circuits, as long as it has four quadrants, that would be the vehicle to walk into the labyrinth, knowing that the quadrants go back and forth between each other, and that the phases of your life, the phases of tree life, can all be walked on and through with that labyrinth experience, and that reaching the center place, you know, is a place of sort of exhale and more breathing and renewal and taking in that walking experience of going back and forth between the phases and finding a message in all that for you. And then the walk out is taking all of that message between, again, the quadrants of the labyrinth, and then back out into the world. So you've released the world to come to be with the labyrinth and to take that journey. And then in taking the knowledge of your journey back out with you is the same as the pilgrimage you would take if you flew to Chartres. You it's the hero's journey process. You have an intention for your journey, your travel, and you pack your bags accordingly. You set your intention before you go. And then on your arrival, that's a whole new part of your journey. You're there, but you haven't quite taken in all that it means to be there. And so you take in the journey and all of its details and all of the things that you learn, you know, whether it's part of a new language or part of a growth process of, you know, learning another level or layer of a spiritual practice. And then you have all of that with you and you take that back home. And in the hero's journey language, it's called bringing home the boon, B-O-O-N, N as in Nancy, bringing home the boon, which is very much a part of, you know, the mythological experience of Timenos and, you know, what the, you know, this nonprofit that you're a part of the Olympus group is trying to do. So it is a sacred space, and the whole reason for a pilgrimage is not to go with your camera and bring home your pictures, but the reason to go is to set that intention. Yeah, I mean, to set that intention and to have that experience always with that, you know, intention in mind. And in changing your intention as you are on your pilgrimage is always, you know, it's always open. Who's going to know your intention but you? So you can change it as you go. And you can reestablish it or gather more as your journey goes on. And then you bring all that back with you, and you have that memory, and you have changed because of that. And I always find it so different. It's so unusual to come back, and, you know, you come into your house that has some, or you've been gone for 2 weeks or 10 days or whatever, and you come into your house and you think, okay, everything's kind of the same here. And then soon you realize that everything looks a little bit different, that you are different. You have changed on your journey, and that's what the labyrinth experience is all about. So aligning that with some kind of a topic, you know, like the trees or the Celtic tree zodiac, which we'll talk about in a second, is all part of this journey experience and the embodiment of walking and being in contemplation as you walk step by step, knowing that your path is there and that you don't have to make any decisions. You know, a labyrinth is not a maze. There are no dead ends, and there are no places that you have to stop and turn around or make a decision about. You know, no puzzles, you know, no frustrations. You know where the center is because you can see it. You might not know how you get there, metaphor intended, but you know that it will eventually lead to the center place and back out again on the same path. So this is a very... you know, it's just an interesting topic. People have other topics that they use for labyrinth work. So what I do in this workshop, one of the first things I do is to help, is to assign everybody to establish some sort of a tree in their memory that is special to them. Maybe a childhood tree that they grew up with, that they saw growing. Maybe they planted it, and by the time they left their house, it was, you know, that much larger, or they brought it home from a special place and planted it in their yard, or they were just aware of a tree in their hometown or in their childhood home that was special to them, and they remember that tree, and that becomes their soul tree. So at the beginning of our workshop, we establish a soul tree, S-O-U-L, soul tree for everybody. Yeah. And people have time to think about that and journal about that. And that, you know, becomes a little bit of a touchstone for the day or for the workshop time, because now they have infiltrated another life form into who they are. So there's a linking communication vocabulary of likeness and similarity with another living being. It's not a human. And I think, and it's not something with, you know, eyeballs and four legs. So it's not a dog or a cat or some other kind of an animal, or a bird, or, you know, so it's a little unusual to have to go through that process, but I love doing that, and people have enjoyed that. And then we align later, after some reflection and some other things and sharing and poetry and whatever, we align with the Celtic zodiac, which I share with everybody usually ahead of time. So that's why I was interested in knowing when you were born, because the Celtic tree zodiac, and there's several Celtic zodiacs, but the tree zodiac is the one I am interested in. And that is set up on the moon phases. So there are 13 trees, and because it's the Celtic culture, it's mostly the Irish, Scottish area of the world.
Right.
And even though the Celts by history did go further east and into the upper Mediterranean and eastern Mediterranean areas, we mostly think of the Celtic spirituality culture as being part of the of England and Scotland and Ireland. So, so I have this wonderful book, which I'm happy to talk about.
Okay.
There's several books, by the way, that are out there that deal with the life of trees and how they are not only so important in our lives, but how they do communicate with each other, how they really are very intelligent, and we need to honor that, and we need to know that they are here, you know, to protect us and ground us, but not to be abused. So I'll never forget when we lived in North Carolina, the family next door to us had just moved in, and they decided to put a pool in their backyard. Oh, my gosh. We lived in an older home, and we had probably 45 camellia bushes around the area. And those of you in the South know how precious those are. They're shiny-leafed, beautiful bushes that are beautiful all year round. They're evergreen, and they start blooming in February, March with these beautiful rose-like flowers. And the gentleman that owned the house before we moved in was a camellia scholar of some kind, and he had labeled every single bush, which were now almost, you know, smallish tree size, and they were all healthy and big and beautiful. Well, they do need shade. So you're probably way ahead of me story-wise, but the gentleman decided in putting his pool in, and he was going to cut down a substantial number of trees in his yard, which took away all the shade on the camellia bushes on that side of the yard. Well, some of these bushes were probably 40 years old. And, you know, they did survive, but they were, you know, having a rough time. So, it was awful. I mean, I was in tears. I was really upset that that it was just so devastating. And, of course, it was noisy, and they were, you know, taking these trees and they were getting rid of them, and they were buzzing their saws, and they were doing the chipper out in the street. And, oh, my gosh. But I've never forgotten that. And that was probably, I don't know, it was probably 20 years ago. And it was just mind-boggling and disturbing and just, you know, kind of gut-wrenching. And I've just never forgotten that, you know, for the joy of having a swimming pool, somebody else's shade was totally destroyed.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a woodsy, the whole area was sort of a woodsy area. I sort of understand the likability of leisure vehicles of play and recreation and the chance to have family together and all of that. I mean, I kind of get that. But boy, in the meantime. Anyway, I'm sorry, I got off track here. What was I talking about? Oh, they.
It's all about the trees.
It's all about the trees. Zodiac.
Yes.
Is, you know, it's fascinating, and it's the moon, moon cycles, and there are 13 of them. So, and because it's that culture, the trees that they chose, which are ancient in their culture, are celebrated for the most part kind of a maybe 25-day cycle. So there's the birch in December, and the cycle begins on December 24th because that's considered the beginning of that new year. So the birch is the lady of the woods and symbolizes birth and new beginnings and the caring for each other in starting a new life and the first life of the new path. So there's an unselfishness about the birch tree and a tolerance. And then, and this kind of goes on, and I know you were born in March, and your tree is the alder tree, A-L-D-E-R. And it's the tree of the trailblazer, and in the Celtic culture, that's full of a lot of gods and goddesses. It's the tree of Bran, B-R-A-N, who is the the one of the gods of strength and compassion, and you know, kind of a divine element of kindness. So it's all of that association. So isn't that lovely, Athena? I think that's a wonderful tree for you.
I like the elder tree.
And the elder tree lives mostly around rivers. It grows near the rivers, and it grows a long time. And it's considered to be protective. It shields the river and the life around the river. And because it's so tolerant of the river life, when it gets wet for a long amount of time, like its roots and parts of the tree that become wet because it's near the rivers, it turns very, very hard, hard like stone. So elder tree, for using it as elements of your life, if you made a shield out of it, it would be very hard to penetrate that shield because of its hardness that is established when it goes, you know, underwater.
Wow.
So it's I know it is used a lot in weaponry, but I also think that the symbol of that is one of strength and courage, and also the symbol of being protective and supportive. It's all part of that. And if it is cut down, there's something about the juices that are inside the tree that it's red. And so we often hear of the alder in fairy stories and folklore as bleeding. The bleeding tree is
right,
the alder.
Yeah.
So there's a life force about it that's really fascinating. It's part of the folklore, you know, that is real. I just love that. I love that for you. That it's very rooted in this soil, which could be wet, and that it has this wonderful sort of divine type of a strength, that it's full of courage and compassion. So that speaks to me. And they're not huge trees, but they're very rooted, and they can be very tall, and they grow in a grove-like atmosphere around rivers and
yeah,
little streams, often with moss on the ground. So they're prolific.
They sound very enchanting.
Yeah, they are very enchanting, that area of the world. And they're also considered kind of a totem tree for the god Bran, B-R-A-N. It's a guardian tree. How about that?
Nice.
I find that wonderfully fascinating. So there you are, my strong woman, you. How about that?
Cool, and I can use that, or I could develop that as my salt tree, couldn't I?
Well, in my workshop, I try to separate them. The salt tree is sort of a tree that you have lived with, or that it's special
right.
to you already in your life and in your memory.
Right.
And your Celtic zodiac tree might be your tree out of an imaginal life. So it's more of a
right.
symbol in a different world for you. And so that becomes, you know, a new type of a heritage and a new way of infiltrating that into, it could be into your soul. It could be that the two trees
right.
combine, that their roots find each other, and that offers, you know, the strength of your past and the strength of what you know now is your Celtic, is your own Celtic tree. That's true. That's a good, thank you. That's a great question.
I like that idea.
Well, good. I'm glad you like that. Well, my birthday is November 23rd. And, you know, we live in Northern Illinois, and the trees around here are big. We have big old white oaks that have been here for a couple hundred years or more. We have a lot of maple trees, which they're a little bit too prolific to be as lovely as I would like them to be. And then we've brought in some hemlocks and whatever. But, you know, when you think of trees and having a strong, wonderful tree symbol in your zodiac birth month, you want something that's kind of exciting and strong and, you know, protects everybody. Well, my tree in the zodiac is the broom, or the reed, R-E-E-D, reed, which they consider in the Celtic zodiac culture a type of tree. Well, and so I thought, holy cow, how did I end up with this tree? Well, you know, in reading more about it, of course, I'm finding that it is prolific in the area in Scotland and Ireland. And I've seen it. I've been there and I have seen it. And it is has a bright yellow flower that is kind of a triple pillow. And it's a symbol of well-being and ridding life of harmful influences, because that's considered to be at the end of their year. See, this is right before the new year, which is the December 24th. So it's, you know, it's like a month away from that. So the symbol is that you are sweeping away the old year and that you are making your pathway clean to enter into your new year. So this is symbol, the zodiac symbol for the broom and the reed, and the yellow of that flower of the broom reed tree in quotes, it has become a symbol for garments for the royalty in all of that Celtic culture. So I thought, well, I think that's okay. I can live with the sweeping out the old and bringing in the new. I can live with, you know, the royalty color vestments and, you know, costumes and dress of the royalty. So, and whatever royalty means, I'm thinking it, they have made the broom and the color of the flower an important and noticed aspect of what they wear on a regular basis. So I just thought, you know, this is really interesting. Just interesting to consider that as a place, or a being that has a truth to it, that means that you have a way of releasing what you, you know, that's unnecessary for you, or that you don't want to face anymore, or that you've dealt with and you're getting rid of it. And that's what we do when we walk the labyrinth. You know, the first sort of directive is to release the world. You release the world you came in, you came from, and you are present on the threshold of your journey at this moment, and you take all of that into your breathing and your entering into that pilgrimage world, and you just walk, you step by step. You don't even have to have an intention. It's just a breath, and you take that 10 minutes, that 30 minutes, and the whatever to take that pilgrimage and that journey and leave whatever behind.
Right, and this is part of the journey of the pilgrimage of the trees, right? They're connecting with this tree energy, their soul tree, and the tree that they connect with on a lunar Celtic spiritual way, and they walk the labyrinth through those elements.
Well, yes.
I'm almost, yeah, okay. I'm experiencing it a little different.
Experiencing it different from what?
I'm experiencing it different from the experience that I had when you taught the class. When you did the workshop.
Well,
yeah.
Maybe this is a new iteration of how you experienced that. And I think when you were taking the class, it was a shorter version of the whole weekend experience that I wanted to do. So,
oh my God. So if people are going to want to experience, they can. They don't have to be a facilitator. They don't have to be a member, right? They can sign up.
No, anybody can take the class.
And
how can they
get that information again? I didn't realize we were really getting into the program. It's almost time to wrap up. This is amazing.
I mean, I do a lot of these, you know, with other groups as well. I don't have anything before March 20th, but I've been doing little, you know, hour and a half versions of this for various groups around the country. So, and they've all been virtual this year, which has been kind of online.
Amazing.
I guess that's the word, not virtual, because they have been happening. So they're not really virtual, but they are online. So,
right.
So this is through Veriditas. This is Veriditas.org, based in San Francisco. It's the Labyrinth Worldwide Project, Labyrinth Community. So, yeah, and Walking Like Trees is one of the offerings of the many, 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 many classes and web classes that are available, and repeating that the finger walks or handheld labyrinth walks are done every Friday, and you can register for that. Some of them are done at noon Pacific time, some at 4 o'clock Pacific time, and then whatever your time zone is based on that. And they change because we have a whole group in Australia that's pretty active. We have people from Japan and China and India and all over who are taking time to do a handheld labyrinth walk on their Fridays at some point. So, yeah.
Right. Wow. So the workshop just sounds really intense, and I'm glad that you came here and I let everyone hear it, and I hope our listeners will get to experience it. I plan to experience it again as a pre-birthday gift for myself. And
that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. It's like, it's so funny because getting in touch with nature and with trees, I think a lot of people do take advantage of the tree and don't give it enough love. And those that do, that's excellent. And especially in a rural or part of town, it's like, oh, there's a tree. You don't really take the time out to, like, you know, really connect with it or, you know, be in that element. And I was, it's funny because with your workshop, like, I have trees around my home, and I've never really taken the time to connect with them. And then when I did, I noticed that when I was setting a labyrinth in my backyard, I looked up and there's this tree, and it's like, it's literally looked like it's leaning over into my yard looking at what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, this is perfect. I mean, and it's like I felt almost ashamed because I felt like I've never taken advantage of connecting with this tree, even though it's like on the far side of me. But I'm like, it's there, and it's letting me know it's there.
You have acknowledged it now. So that's the whole purpose of your having done your labyrinth there. So that tree is now a huge part of protecting that labyrinth and being there to oversee it. You know, in Ireland, there are large open areas of farm property or just land. They might have a single tree in the middle of the land, and they call it the fairy tree, F-A-E-R-Y, the fairy tree. So there are fairy trees, as you might imagine, all over Ireland. So that may be your guardian tree, your fairy tree, and it may be there just exactly for that purpose. And I think because we always have trees around us, I mean, for the most part, we forget that they have such great importance in our lives because they're kind of always there. So we do, we do forget that, and that's kind of an abuse of who they are. So
yes, absolutely.
So, this is something from Thich Nhat Hanh, who just died last year, who I greatly admire. And it's a wonderful guru of wisdom from the Vietnamese monk world. He says, I know that in our previous life we were trees, and even in this life we continue to be trees. Without trees we cannot have people. Therefore trees and people inter are. We are trees and air and bushes and clouds. If trees cannot survive, humankind will not survive either. We get sick because we have damaged our environment, and we are in mental anguish because we are so far away from our true mother, Mother Nature. I just love that.
Wow.
So,
wow.
Yeah, we really are far away from it. So
that's true. Yeah, I love a lot of his conversations. They really are thought-provoking, too.
They are.
We have enough time for people to share their contact information. That was an awesome program. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you. Okay. So your workshop once again is on March 20th. You could go to veritas.org and you can sign up for is it called the Labyrinth Odyssey, the pilgrimage
Walking Like Trees.
I know that. Duh.
Yeah.
Like Trees. Right. And actually for myself, if you want to, you can get in touch with me through Walkers of the Labyrinth on Facebook, or you can join me on February 26th at for a monthly meetup, a full moon labyrinth walk, and that will be on Meetup. So it's online full moon labyrinth walk. And that's it for now.
Good. Yeah. Well, this has been wonderful. I so appreciate the chance to share, you know, something I really love. And hopefully those of you out there who are frequent walkers of the labyrinth will take in this other consciousness of nature around you and walk with those sort of life phases in a partnership as you walk the labyrinth. Because that's what I'm talking about, and that's what we would do in our workshop in a little bit deeper layered way, but that's kind of the essence of it on a surface basis, to walk with that in our hearts.
Absolutely. Walking with trees.
Yeah. So perfect. I'm thrilled to the opportunity to share all of this. Athena, you were sweet to ask me, and I'm just, I love being a part of this.
Oh, thank you, Barry. Thank you. Glad you
thank
could
you
be
so
here.
Much.
Okay. So take care, and I'll talk to you really soon.
Okay. So do we have any more time, or is this it?
No, this
is
thank
it. So I want to thank everyone for listening. Thank you, Barry. Thank you, Hercules. And
thank
have
you.
A good night.
Thanks, Athena. Yes. Thanks, Hercules. Blessings
you
to all.
Welcome.
All right.
Thank
bye-bye.
You too. And thanks to everybody who's joined us from home, whether you listen to us live or whether you're joining us later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you a happy Valentine's Day, joyous journeys, and amazing adventures. We're going to close with Virginia Ackley's If You Can Dream.
If you can dream, if you can fly, then your heart can touch the sky, but only if you can dream. If love is true and love is real, pain and sorrow soon will heal, but only if you can dream. Dream till you wake. Dream till you feel. Dream till you know it. Dream till it's real. If you can dream, then you can be bound by love and yet be free, but only if you love and trust are.